Blog Talk Radio.
How was your weekend? All right. So, busy news day. We have the independent investigation into the Trump administration from Robert Mueller rolling on. And, there appears to be another important shoe that's about to drop. It looks like Michael Flynn is next on the chopping block, which is a good thing. And, you know, you can go back and check the videos. I was saying all along that Flynn, I thought, was the most guilty. There's a great deal of evidence of his corruption and his cutting of shady backroom deals. So we'll talk about that. We also have Paul Ryan going on Fox News to defend the tax cuts for the rich. We have a heartbreaking story coming out of Afghanistan that's really not being reported on in the U.S. press, and that's a goddamn shame. We have Nancy Pelosi was asked about the DNC rigging and gives a absolutely horrendous answer. The terrible news is, of course, something that we will lead with. Everybody knows at this point, at least, what happened over the weekend. So that's, unfortunately, at this point, it's just another day in America. And, in fact, I will give you numbers to that effect. So without further ado, let's get started here. And we will do that with, I think everybody knows what's coming. The mass shooting story. Yesterday we had another terrible mass shooting. At least 26 people were killed at a church in Sutherland Springs, Texas, on Sunday. Law enforcement confirmed that there were also many more injuries. The shooter is also dead following a brief chase. There was a Good Samaritan who got in his car and basically chased this guy down, and there was a shootout between the two of them, and then it appears like there was a self-inflicted gunshot wound on the part of the perpetrator. The Texas Governor Greg Abbott said, quote, "As a state, we are dealing with the largest mass shooting in our state's history." So here's what we know to this point about the shooting. The shooting reportedly occurred at the First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs, Texas, around 11:30 a.m. local time. This is from Vox, by the way. At least 26 people were killed, although it's not clear if that number will rise. Approximately 20 others were injured. The shooter is dead following a car pursuit by a local resident. It's unclear if he killed himself or was killed by someone else. Since then, I think they've established that he indeed killed himself. The victims' ages range from 5 years old to 72. Years old. First Baptist Church pastor Frank Pomeroy's 14-year-old daughter and all of his family's close friends were killed in the attack. This is what Pomeroy told Houston-based ABC 13. The shooter has been identified as 26-year-old Devin Patrick Kelly, law enforcement officials told CBS and NBC. Kelly was previously in the Air Force, but he was court-martialed and sentenced to a bad conduct discharge, according to the Daily Beast. Now, I'm going to come back to that in just a second here. Local, state, and federal law enforcement are on the ground. There is no other threat in the area at the time, according to law enforcement. Sutherland Springs is about 30 miles southeast of San Antonio. It's an unincorporated community with a population of about 400, according to San Antonio-based Fox 29. The church regularly posts videos of its services, and it shows, you know, a vibrant community with parishioners singing, playing electric guitar, and talking about all types of things. So, I told you I'd come back and I'd revisit his bad conduct discharge from the Air Force. He was discharged because he assaulted his wife and his kid. He's a domestic abuser. He was still legally able to purchase guns. Donald Trump came out after the shooting and said, well, I mean, look, let's don't blame the gun. This is a mental health issue is what this is. And the problem is not guns. The problem is that this guy had a gun. So blame him. Blame the individual. And guess what? According to his own logic, he did the wrong thing because it was the Trump administration and it was the Republicans who recently signed a piece of legislation that said if you're not of sound enough mind to control your finances and you're on Social Security, they say you should be able to have a gun. It was under Obama that he said, okay, listen, if we already know as a matter of fact that somebody is not of sound enough mind to control their finances, they're not of sound enough mind to control a firearm. Well, Trump and the Republicans disagreed. And they got rid of that rule. So even according to his own logic of, well, don't blame the gun per se. You blame this particular person and the fact that this person had a gun. Okay, well, you've shown repeatedly that you're actually okay with people with severe mental issues having guns. In fact, the Republicans have been on a tear attempting to gut Medicaid. I mean, they didn't do the Medicaid expansion under Obamacare. I mean, that's one fact. But in Trump Care and all the different versions, they cut Medicaid further. Well, guess what? Medicaid is the number one provider of mental health care in the country. So you don't get to do the tap dance and say, oh, mental illness, mental illness, mental illness, when you are in favor of people with severe mental issues getting a gun. And you're also not in favor of treating those mental illnesses because you're gutting the program that treats them. So this is the tap dance, and we go round and round and round, and nothing gets accomplished, even though these shootings keep happening. And by the way, let me show you this chart here because this is something else. This shows us the five deadliest shootings in modern U.S. history. They've all come in the last 10 years, and two of them in the past 6 weeks. So the number one worst mass shooting just happened in Las Vegas, 58 people killed. What was it, over 300 people injured? That just happened. And now, you know, a month later, 26 people killed in Sutherland Springs, Texas. And you go down the list there. There was the one in Orlando, Florida, the Pulse nightclub shooting. That was in 2016. Virginia Tech, 2007. Sandy Hook, 2012. You go down the list there, and if it feels like they're occurring more often, it's because they are. And we live in a country that's so corrupt and the system is so rotten that even when 93% of the American people say, I want a universal background check, a comprehensive universal background check for gun purchases, we don't get that passed. We don't get that into law. I mean, that's wild, man. In what's supposed to be a representative democracy, you would think that the politicians would represent you enough where when 93% of you want something, we get it. I mean, that's a pretty open and shut case, is it not? But no, we don't get it. Why? Because the NRA pays a tremendous amount of money to Republican politicians, and they block any and all reform on this issue, no matter how commonsensical it is. I mean, 93% universal background check, we can't get that. 60% want a ban on high-capacity magazines. We can't get that. And by the way, you know how sometimes it's the case where you look at a shooting and you go, I don't know what law could have prevented this. Because sometimes a law couldn't have prevented it because the facts of the matter are just, hey, the person didn't have anything messed up in their background, or, you know, for whatever reason, a specific law wouldn't have stopped a specific case. Well, this is one of those cases where a law would have stopped it. You know, by the way, the Dylan Roof one, they didn't complete the background check on Dylan Roof before they sold him his weapon. If we had a longer waiting period between when he goes to purchase his gun and when he actually gets his gun, perhaps the Dylan Roof one could have been prevented because he would have failed the background check. In this instance, if the guy is a domestic abuser, I mean, any thorough background check that has, rules linked to that would go, yeah, we're not selling to you because you're a domestic abuser. So this isn't a lot to ask for, man. This is not a lot to ask for. To say, let's have a background check, let's have rules as to who can and cannot buy it. And then people go, well, listen, but Kyle, that's not going to work because then who's to say that these people won't go on the black market and get a gun that way and then end up doing the same thing? Yes, in some of those cases. But you will prevent many of these shootings because these laws deter some people from going that extra step. Some people might not have the connect to get a gun on the black market or something like that. So what we're talking about here is macro statistics. And we live in a country where over 10,000 people die every year from homicides, from guns. We have over 32,000 that die from gun violence. Now, that number admittedly includes homicides, suicides, accidents. So, yes, unless you go totally, full-on authoritarian and ban all guns, you're not going to cut that number to, like, under 100 people. And I'm not in favor of banning guns, as I've stated 1,000 times. But what I am in favor of is regulation to drastically reduce that number. The over 32,000 gun deaths and the over 10,000 homicides. And there's no doubt that simple reforms would achieve that goal. I mean, we should be treating guns like we treat cars. We should have, you know, a permitting system. We obviously should have a universal background check. You know, AR-15s have been used in almost all these shootings. Why are those still legal? So ban on high-capacity magazines. This is not a lot to ask for. You know, if you're somebody who is a law-abiding citizen and you want a gun for protection, I'm nobody to tell you you can't have that, and I think you should have that. But that doesn't mean that a guy who was a domestic abuser and it was on his record and we knew about it, doesn't mean that that guy should legally be able to get a gun. And if you disagree with that, then I think you're just being stubborn on purpose. You're searching for a reason to disagree, even though you know it's totally unreasonable to disagree on that front. So, it's just sad, man. They keep happening. They keep happening. And it really is soul-sucking and soul-crushing where I feel, every time I see one of these, I feel so utterly and completely helpless. Because if we had an instance where children were massacred at Sandy Hook, okay, and then we had an instance where 58 people were killed, 58 in Las Vegas. And now we have an instance here where 26 people are killed at least. And all of those happening, and all those happening very recently, haven't led to any change, any reform. Well, then you know what? That Onion article seems prescient and profound. You know, the one that they always tweet out after a mass shooting? You know, it's something along the lines of, there's nothing we can do to stop this, says the only nation where it regularly happens. There's a lot we can do to reduce the number of these things, reduce the casualty rate, but obviously money needs to not corrupt our politics because the Republicans are doing the bidding of the NRA, and you also need to have people who are willing to be intellectually honest about what the problem is. And many people are not. And then, of course, the final point I'll make here is the difference in reaction. Listen, when you had, it's just a fact that when you look at the reaction after the Las Vegas shooting, 58 people dead, hundreds injured. That story, amazingly, was pretty much gone in the media after 3 days. So there's 3 days of coverage, then it kind of petered out, and that was that. And at first, people were like, hey, maybe we ban bump stocks, which is the least you could do because it turns semi-automatic weapons into fully automatic weapons. But then even the conversation about that petered out. The Democrats don't keep the pressure on because they're fucking idiots, and they don't know how to be strong, and they don't know how to fight for what they should believe in. And, you know, this is an instance where I'm keeping my eye on it. I think the same thing's going to happen. Give it 3 days and it'll peter out. And the response from the right, when you look at, for example, the terrorist attack that just happened in New York, where far fewer people died, and that's not to downplay it. Again, it's just to state the fact of the matter. I think it was 9 people who died in the terror attack in New York. When you turned on right-wing media outlets, it was wall-to-wall coverage of that, and it was, oh, my God, we have to do something about it. We have to do something about it now. And, of course, this is what they used to call for immigration bans and further extreme vetting, even though we have extreme vetting and all this stuff. But it's amazing how they go, depending on the identity of the shooter, they go on the offense in one instance to totally playing defense in the other instance, where now it's like, you know, they say, whoa, what do you mean? No, this is a lone wolf. This is a guy with a mental illness, and this is not, there's nothing we could do about this. I mean, this is basically the price of freedom. And even fucking Morning Joe pointed this out on MSNBC. He said, imagine this shooter who went into a church and killed at least 26 people and shot a 5-year-old and a 70-some-odd-year-old. Imagine this person's name was Muhammad. Imagine their name was Muhammad. And then think about the reaction and how quickly people would want to do something. And by the way, in that instance, probably do something that would not directly address the problem. Because, like, for example, every time they talk about solutions to Islamic terrorism, they want to do stuff like what? The so-called Muslim ban, which doesn't even put countries like Saudi Arabia on the list. By the way, I'm not in favor of a ban. It's not a good idea. But if you're going to try to identify a threat, maybe the place where most of the attackers on 9/11 came from would be the number one place. Maybe the fucking, extremist Wahhabi state would be the number one place. But no, there are allies, so they get off the list. And then what are you going to do, ban people from fucking Uzbekistan when this is the one attacker maybe ever from Uzbekistan in the U.S.? So, you know, their solutions are irrational even when they want to call for solutions in certain circumstances. But it's amazing how there's no discussion of potential solutions when it's a white dude with a gun. There's none whatsoever in right-wing circles. And listen, man, people say you can't politicize a tragedy. Everything's already political. And yes, that includes when there's a Muslim terrorist attack, that includes when there's a right-wing terror attack, that includes when there's a mass shooting. So it is only perfectly logical after all these things happen to, you know, discuss what to do to try to prevent the next one from occurring. And we're not really doing that. And I don't think anything's going to get accomplished. And, you know, in far right-wing circles online, you know who they're blaming this on? Antifa. Because there was a joke tweet that blew up where, you know, people were talking. We covered this story where left-wingers were kind of mocking and trolling right-wingers and saying, on November 4th, Antifa super soldiers will behead all white parents in the public square or something to that effect. And it's obvious jokes. And what happened? Many right-wing outlets said, well, they were a day late, but here it is. Here it is. On November 5th, they're killing all these white people. Unbelievable. Antifa, terror group. It's like it doesn't matter what the facts are. It's always go back to the narrative. Here are the facts. I will go back to the narrative. Facts, narrative, facts, narrative. Doesn't matter if there's no connection. Doesn't matter if it makes absolutely no sense. Just, you know, hey, how can I find a way to spin this to blame it on Antifa? I saw some calling this guy, oh, he converted to Islam. Zero evidence of that at all, even though the answer in this instance is literally right in front of our faces. The guy was a domestic abuser, obviously had serious issues, and he was still legally allowed to get a gun. Oh, it's really sad. And this is going to keep happening. It's going to keep happening unless there's a giant offensive from the Democrats to say, no, this isn't going to happen anymore, and here are exactly what our proposals are. I love how, you know, Obama and Biden, they tweeted about this, and they said, we need to come up with strong, clear solutions on gun reform. Why don't you list them? This is the Democratic disease is weakness and vagueness, you know? Like, you literally can go out there after the shooting and say, universal background checks, no exceptions, a ban on high-capacity magazines, a permitting system, ban on assault weapons. You could list what you think the solutions are. But, you know, it's just like, we must do something, and then that something gets watered down so much to the point where it's fucking nothing. Where even the bump stock ban, just the bump stock ban, which prevents semi-automatics from becoming fully automatics, even that died. And it died because the Democrats are weak and they don't fight, even though this is an opportunity. It's an opportunity to give the American people what they want and what they desperately need and deserve. It's an opportunity to fight, to stand up for what your values are supposed to be. But that's exactly the problem. When you don't really believe in anything, then everything peters out and flounders away and oscillates in the fucking atmosphere and just becomes irrelevant. So here we are yet again, another giant tragedy, and Congress will continue to sit around with their thumbs up their ass. Okay. All right, now we are going to move on to the independent investigation into Donald Trump. The independent investigation into Donald Trump and his cronies is rolling on. Look at this. Mueller has enough evidence to charge Mike Flynn, Trump's former national security advisor. Wowzers. Well, here we go. This is something that I said when we got the news on Manafort. For the news on Manafort, I thought it was going to be news on Flynn that day because we didn't know yet who it was that Mueller was going to indict. But I was like, I think it's Flynn because I thought of all the evidence there was for all the different characters involved, the evidence on Flynn was the strongest. Well, now we know he's coming after Flynn as well. This is Reuters. They say, Special Counsel Robert Mueller has collected sufficient evidence to charge Michael Flynn, U.S. President Donald Trump's former national security advisor, and his son, NBC News reported on Sunday, citing multiple sources familiar with the investigation. NBC News said Mueller's team is looking at possible money laundering charges, lying to federal agents, and Flynn's role in a possible plan to remove an opponent of the Turkish president from the United States, probably talking about Gulen, in exchange for millions of dollars. Mueller is increasing pressure on Flynn following his indictment of Trump's campaign manager, Paul Manafort, NBC News said. So this is really interesting because now I think what Mueller's doing is he's applying pressure. So he's using the Manafort indictment to turn around to everybody else and go, okay, you ready to talk now? We're coming after you. So, I mean, you're ready to talk and maybe cut a deal and maybe you get out of this a little bit better than other people involved. So he's really holding the feet to the fire in this investigation. And, you know, I found it amazing that some people were surprised that I, like, was on Mueller's side in the Manafort announcement. Of course I'm on Mueller's side. Just because I think the specific charge of fucking treason against Donald Trump and, oh my God, you're Putin's puppet. Just because I think that's bullshit, by the way, because it is bullshit, in order for there to be some sort of a backroom deal made with Vladimir Putin or the Kremlin and Vladimir Putin would have to get something in return. They've gotten nothing from the Trump administration. There's been an increase in sanctions. Trump has bombed Russia's ally in Syria, who, by the way, are fighting ISIS, and he's done that repeatedly. So there's been no move in a less aggressive direction with Russia. So no, I don't think there's any backroom deal cut with the Kremlin. But that doesn't mean that Trump and or people in his administration aren't massively guilty of corruption. They are, not just, of course, in the U.S. with our own giant corporations and doing the bidding of them, which, again, they are guilty of that. But unfortunately, in the U.S., we've made that legal, so we don't care when fucking Goldman Sachs buys an administration. But, we do care what? When, in the case of Manafort, he was doing favors for Ukraine. We do care when you have Flynn, who was bought off by Turkey. And by the way, it's not just theoretical. And, you know, they're talking about, hey, maybe he was going to try to get, you know, Erdogan's enemy, Gulen, sent back to Turkey. It's not just that, because that's theoretical and that didn't happen. At least it didn't happen yet. But what we do know is that he took $500,000 from the government of Turkey, and then he completely got rid of the idea of arming the Kurds to take back cities that ISIS held. I'm not sure if it was Mosul or Raqqa that the Kurds were going to take back. And all the plans were ready to go, and the U.S. was backing the Kurds, and we're like, okay, you ready? Let's go take this city back from ISIS. Hey, U.S. soldiers aren't doing it. The Kurds on the ground are going to do it. So that's bad. Hey, we don't need to do the fucking ground invasion and all that stuff. So it was a smart policy. I mean, the Kurds have been a solid ally against ISIS on the ground. But who hates the Kurds? Turkey. So if you're Turkey, what do you do? I don't know. Give Flynn fucking $500,000 and have him be a top administration official and go, nope, we're not going to do this plan. Why are we not going to do that plan, Mike? Well, now, you know, the Kurds, we don't know what's going to happen in the fallout, and we don't know if the Kurds are going to, you know, end up giving the place back to who it belongs to. And, we just can't – I'm not in favor of that. Let's not do that. And then they didn't do it. But, you know, Flynn, deeply corrupt, and, you know, eventually – Trump had gotten rid of Manafort because the ties were too obvious to foreign governments and that he's doing their bidding. Flynn, same thing. So I'm not even surprised by this, and I think Mueller's 100% correct. But what I'm interested in is, because remember, the news was Mueller went from just investigating the Russia collusion to investigating corruption in the Trump administration. Well, listen, if Mueller really wanted to take down Trump, you could take down Trump easy. Easy. Why? Because he violated the Emoluments Clause, and he did it in about 100 ways. You know, look, I've always said from the beginning, you can impeach Trump. There's no question about that. It's just a matter of, for strategic reasons, if you want to do it or not, because if you do it, well, you're wasting a lot of political capital in impeaching him, and then at the end of the day, you still can't rest because it's Pence, and Pence is going to do the same draconian agenda, just with a smile on his face, and putting half the country to sleep. So there's a question strategically or not if you want to do it. But in terms of is there a there to impeach Trump, of course there's a there. The fucking Emoluments Clause. Trump was an international businessman. So that means it's not just that he was doing business in different countries. The business involved foreign governments. That's a fact. He's done business in at least 12 different countries. And there's been favoritism going on. I mean, for example, Trump registered – what is it, over a dozen new businesses in Saudi Arabia during the campaign trail, when he was on the campaign trail? And then, wow, look at that. Now that he's elected, Saudi Arabia gets a $110 billion weapons deal. Now, on top of that, Saudi Arabia and Qatar officials from these places, when they come to the U.S. for diplomatic reasons, what do? They stay at a Trump hotel. Guess what? They overpay massively for when they stay there. Why are they voluntarily paying a shitload more money to stay at a Trump hotel? Oh, I don't know. Maybe because they're trying to influence the fucking president who's going to make decisions that affect them? Maybe this is why Trump is turning a blind eye and actively helping further the slaughter and the genocide in Yemen that Saudi's carrying out. Because he's bought by them. Because he's owned by them. So you want to talk Trump-Russia, where he hasn't done anything to benefit Russia? I don't know why you're wasting your fucking time. There's a Trump-Saudi scandal right in front of our goddamn faces. And it's not just Saudi Arabia. Of course, it's other places around the world, too. I'm sure there's been favors done for South Korea, for example, because with South Korea, again, he's got business ties there. And I'm sure he's doing policies that affect them in a positive way. So keep your eye on the ball is my point. If we have, without a doubt, solid evidence, proof that Trump is doing the bidding of those foreign governments and he's taking money from those foreign governments, well, that's a violation of the Emoluments Clause and he can be impeached. So you don't even need to go to the Russia thing where it's speculative and there's no smoking gun when you have the smoking gun in these other areas. So what's interesting to me is Mueller going to go down that path? Now, I don't think he's going to go down that path with Saudi Arabia for obvious reasons because they're the U.S. allies, so everybody acts like it's fine when the fucking terror state controls our politicians. Another one, people act like it's fine when Israel, Sheldon Adelson and all these people, when they control, our politicians. People are like, well, it's an ally. So it's, I don't know, something. Fine, it's whatever. They'll look away even though they're doing apartheid and fucking massacring Palestinians on a regular basis. So there's enough there to go after Trump. The question is he going to go after Trump? And what specifically is he going to go after Trump for? Because we're having a conversation with Flynn about Turkey. That means, again, it's not just limited to Russia. So, well, then you're having a real conversation, and you could take down fucking everybody. So, wow. You know, and the final point I'll make about this is, it really does drive me crazy, though, that, like, the logic of U.S. law is, well, obviously, if somebody in the government is taking money from a foreign government, well, we can't have that because then they'll do their bidding. That's according to U.S. law, they say that's a problem, that's an issue. But that they say that logic does not follow when it comes to giant corporations. When it comes to Wall Street, they go, well, no, that is not. There's no quid pro quo when Goldman Sachs gives a tremendous amount of money to Hillary or Donald Trump or any other politician. There's no quid pro quo when ExxonMobil gives a tremendous amount of money to Republican politicians. There's no quid pro quo when Big Pharma donates to both parties. So no, that shouldn't be illegal because it's not like these politicians are necessarily doing the bidding of these corporations. Yes, they are! And why is it you clearly see that logic when it comes to foreign governments, but you don't when it comes to corporations? It's because our system is so rotten and it's been rotten for a long time. As soon as in the late 70s, when the Supreme Court said, hey, money equals free speech, and they began to open that door, it was just a matter of time before there were subsequent decisions where now it's just a fucking wild, wild west. And if you want to be corrupted 1,000 ways from people within our borders, by all means, go ahead. But the second you do it from somebody outside the border, from a foreign government, well, then they go, wow, that's corruption. It's corruption in both cases, and we need the law to reflect that, which is why we need to get money out of politics and why we need clean elections. But that's another conversation. We don't need to get into that at the moment, but Mueller's going after him, and it looks like he's succeeding. Okay. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, I got a lot of stuff to get to, man. The Tea Party idiots contradict themselves. Man, is that sad. And Paul Ryan went on Fox News and defended repealing the estate tax. Then I'll also get to some Dianne Feinstein stuff. Don't go anywhere.
on the left, real nigga left. The left. It's like I'm on an island by myself. The left. Please don't make me slap you with the left. The left. You will fake, so I'm gonna drop you with the left. The left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga left. The left. It's like I'm on an island by myself. The left. Girl, please protect me if this shit go left. Cause I can cook a kilo by my goddamn self. In the kitchen, water whipping with the left. I don't know women, but I know who got the milk.
Son of a bitch. Alright, we're back, y'all.
You ain't no Gucci, okay. So go go then hold your breath. This shit ain't cut as raw. This shit goes in itself.
All right, Mark Meadows. You know who he is? He is one of the Tea Party guys, and you are going to love what he said. Representative Mark Meadows is the head of the ironically named Freedom Caucus. I say ironically named because the Freedom Caucus, funny Freudian slip. The Freedom Caucus is, they're also known as the Tea Partiers. So they call it the freedom. But when I say freedom, I mean I'm also socially backwards and not in favor of freedom. I don't want to legalize drugs. I don't want to allow women to control their own bodies and so on and so forth. So they're not, they don't believe in freedom. But this guy went on the Sunday shows and he made a pretty giant admission about the Republican tax plan and about how the Tea Party movement is a fraud.
You know, you've been a long, not spoken, you and fellow Freedom Caucus members have been deficit hawks, but this bill's going to increase the deficit by at least $1.5 trillion. A lot of independent analysts say it could be far more than that. So can you vote for this bill?
Well, we can. I can tell you right now it's a work in progress. Obviously, Peter King is advocating real hard on behalf of his constituents, and I appreciate that. Peter and I actually were on the House floor just the other day, and as we were talking about what it does for his constituents, what it does for mine. I can tell you on the deficit side of things, even though we're looking at a $1.5 trillion increase in that deficit in the short run, the preliminary numbers really look very good in terms of economic growth. So over a longer period of time, some 10 to 15 years, we believe that the economic growth will outweigh any short-term deficit increase that we see. And so Peter and I are going to have to continue to work together to hopefully get this right. We're going to start the markup on Monday in the House. The Senate will be rolling out their bill in the next few days. But at the end of the day, failure is not an option.
So you're willing to vote to increase the deficit over 10 years?
I am. I mean, we've looked at this. Of course, I'm a numbers guy, George, and as I've looked at this particular bill, it appears that we should be able to get hopefully a 3.5 to 3.6 GDP growth bump.
That is a stunning admission, because here's the guy who's the head of the Tea Partiers going, the deficit? Yeah, sure, why not? You want to increase it over 10 years? Yeah, I'm in favor of that. And then he goes on to give his boatload of rationalizations, but remember, he did admit it right there. In other words, even if it increases, yeah, I'm fine with doing it. $1.5 trillion added to the debt? Whatevs, dude. Okay, well then do me a favor and shut the fuck up. The next time, the Democrats are in power and you want to do your deficit scolding, well, just understand that it's bullshit. Okay, you, when it's your party, your team in power, you just admitted it. You're like, yeah, I don't care. Add to the deficit. It's cool. I'm in favor of that. So, and it's not one of the founding principles of the Tea Party movement was we're concerned about the future generations because of the increasing debt and deficit. So what was it really about? It wasn't about that. Your movement couldn't have been about that, because the second you're in power, you immediately go back on that. You know, it's not like, when we get in power, talking, of course, about the populist left and the Bernie wing of the Democratic Party and Justice Democrats, it's not like when we get in power, we go, yeah, you know, we believe in Medicare for all, but now we don't want it. No, that's one of our defining policies. That's, of course, what we want, because the facts show it's the best way to move forward, and it would save lives, and it would save money. And but he's saying, yeah, what, that one of the main things we use for the Tea Party, I don't care. I don't care. So in other words, what's it really about? Tax cuts for the rich. Because that's exactly what this tax plan does. That's exactly what it does. It slashes the corporate tax rate, even though corporations are already paying a historic low percentage of the tax burden. It, over a certain amount of time, eliminates the estate tax. At first, it doubles, you know, who it applies to, or I shouldn't say double. That's not the right way of phrasing it. It raises the line where it kicks in. So it used to be 5 million or so. Now they're making it 11 million. So it cuts the estate tax at first, makes it apply to fewer people, and then in the future it eliminates it. So this, all this is a ruse, man. That's all it is. It's for corporations and wealthy people to raid the treasury, to loot the treasury. And yes, declare war on the middle class and the poor, because again, a little discussed fact in this Republican tax plan is the bottom rate goes from 10% to 12%. Wait, what? Well, that would be you raising taxes on the poor and the middle class. That's what that is. That's raising taxes on them, as you pretend like you're cutting taxes for everybody, and then you turn around and go, even if it does add to the deficit, I'm fine with it. See, their old argument was, and this was a lie, and when you do dynamic scoring, that makes it so that there's not going to be an increase to the deficit. So in other words, when you, their argument is when you cut taxes for the rich, that unleashes the beast of the capitalist system, and there's so much economic growth that even though you're taxing at a lower percentage, there's more revenue coming into the government because the growth of the economy is so amazing. Well, that doesn't happen every time you do it. Every time they've tried trickle-down economics, or as George H.W. Bush called it, voodoo economics, because even he understood it was bullshit, every time you try it, you have boom-bust cycles in the economy, and all you have is the rich get richer, there's less regulation, and everything goes to shit eventually. And, of course, the deficit and the debt explodes. That was their old argument. Now you caught Mark Meadows in a moment of truth where he's like, well, yeah, but even if it does add to the deficit, I'm in favor of it anyway. So when it's a bill that massively cuts taxes for the wealthy, yeah, deficit, schmeficit, I don't care. When it's Medicare for all, no, we can't afford it, can't afford it. When it's free college, oh, we can't afford it. I don't understand why we can't afford it. When they want to go to endless war, oh, that's fine. Add to the deficit, here's a blank check, just whatever. We'll waste money, just fucking throw it down a money pit when it comes to the military-industrial complex, when it comes to Wall Street, and when it comes to forking over more money to corporations and the rich. So that, just know how this game is played, because it's clear, it's right in front of you. Whenever it's something the government wants to do for you that makes sense with your tax money, can't afford it. When it's a tax plan that 100% biases the system, rigs the system in favor of the rich, when it's class warfare against the middle class and the poor, they're in favor of that tax bill, even if it adds to the debt and the deficit, because they're charlatans and they don't really care about the issues that they claim to care about. Okay. Next. Paul Ryan and the estate tax. So we got more Republican silliness on taxes. Paul Ryan went on Fox News and he defended the Republican tax plan, which of course over time repeals the estate tax. Let's look at his cringeworthy back and forth here with Chris Wallace.
And why repeal the estate tax? We're only talking about like 5,000 people a year. There's already an $11 million exemption.
I'd say two things.
First of all, it's a fairness argument. Second of all, it's a jobs argument. You actually create jobs by getting rid of this death tax. Because you know what kills one family business from passing their business on to the next generation?
the estate tax.
But there are a lot of protections for family farms. We believe that this is a fairness argument. People work hard to build up their business, their farm, their ranch, all of their working lives. They pay taxes on that money all of their lives. And then when you die, you get it taxed away from you and you can't pass it on to the next generation. We just think it's unfair. Death should not be a taxable event, and we should not be stopping people from being able to pass their life's work on to their kids.
He just said it's a fairness argument and a jobs argument. Okay, it only applies to people worth over $5 million. $5 million. It's called the estate tax, not the death tax. That's their reframing propaganda. It's called the estate tax because it only applies to people with fucking estates. It's like 0.2%. Maybe, I think it might even be 0.02, but either 0.2 or 0.02, I don't remember exactly what it is. But it is the tiniest sliver of the American public. So it doesn't apply to the middle class. It doesn't apply to the poor. It doesn't apply to the upper middle class. It doesn't apply to many rich people. It only applies to the ultra wealthy. And he says, it's a fairness argument. Fairness? You want to talk about fairness? Are you kidding me? The best people to tax in a society, because we have to tax some people, because we got to, you know, build the roads and the bridges and the infrastructure. We got to fund the cops and the fire department and the military. You know, we got to have a bare minimum social safety net and unemployment insurance and the VA and all this stuff. The best group of people to tax are rich, deceased people. But no, he says, I mean, and think about it. This flies directly in the face of their other welfare queen argument. What, are you going to give people something that they didn't earn? What, do you want to give this family like $3 per meal to feed their kids? Oh, gross. You're creating moochers and parasites. Somehow that's a welfare queen when you're getting a little bit of money to just feed your kids and keep the fucking lights on. But when it's, you want to take away? You want to make it so that this fucking incredibly rich person born into privilege is only able to inherit $500 million instead of $1 billion? Oh! 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 The fucking horror. The horror. I mean, think about it. That's really the argument that they're making. Somehow, when a rich prick, spoiled brat kid of a rich person, who maybe they self-built their empire, but the kid did not, just part of the good sperm club, happened to be brought up lucky to be the kid of that person, they say it is a fucking scandal, and it's about fairness to make sure that they get the full $1 billion, not just $500 million. So somehow, when people are given shit and they're rich kids, that doesn't affect their character. That doesn't make them leeches or moochers. You know, the pull yourself up by your bootstraps argument is only for, you know, poor single mothers who are trying to feed their kids. The pull yourself up by your bootstraps argument doesn't apply to lazy-ass rich kids who are spoiled brats. They get to get whatever they want. It's fairness, fairness, fairness. And jobs, jobs. That's not true. I would love to see a study as to how many jobs are created as a result of repealing the estate tax. The notion that you have to give the rich kids all the money in order to create jobs, that's not backed up by any evidence. What happens is these people take the money and they'll put it right in their bank account, and they don't work a goddamn day in their life. You know, this is the same bullshit arguments, the same tired arguments that they repeat over and over, even when it comes to the marginal tax rate, so the individual tax rate. They act like, oh my God, the rich people will create jobs if you just give them more money. No, it turns out they put it in their fucking bank accounts or it goes to pad the bottom line for corporate profits, which is why you have a situation where the market booms, but half the country makes $30,000 a year or less. And, you know, regular people are struggling, and wages have been stagnant since the fucking 1980s. Because when you say cut tax for the rich creates jobs, it doesn't do that. It does not do that. If it did that, it would have worked the first time in the fucking 19-teens and 20s. It didn't. We got the Great Depression. It would have worked the second time under Clinton and George W. Bush. It didn't. We got the subprime mortgage crisis and the Great Recession. And now you want to do it again. it's a fairness argument to get rid of the estate tax. Give me a fucking break, man. This victim, the rich are such victims. Ah! The richest 8 people in the world have more money than the bottom 3.5 billion or whatever it is. So richest 8 people, more than half the world combined. The top 1% has more wealth, or I think it's 0.1% has more wealth than the bottom 90%. So do you understand that? That's like you open up a box of pizza, and the top 0.1% takes more than half the pizza pie. And the bottom 90% of people has less than half a pie then to fight over the rest of it. And he goes, wow, estate tax, which only applies to ultra-wealthy multimillionaires. Wow, that's unfair. It's unfair to them. The only fair thing for the rich is for them to have absolutely all the money and for us to be their peasants. Paul, you're a joke. You're not a moderate Republican. You're not a reasonable person. You're not an intellectual. You never graduated past that teenage Ayn Rand phase, and it's clear. Okay. Okay. Now let's go to Dianne Feinstein. Uh-oh. Senator Dianne Feinstein responded to the fact that she has progressive primary challengers, including Justice Democrat Alison Hartson. Let's see what she had to say.
You're up for re-election next year, and this week, Alison Hartson, who is a 37-year-old Bernie Sanders supporter, announced that she's going to enter the race. You're already facing a challenge from State Senate President Kevin DeLeon. Their argument is that you haven't held President Trump accountable and that you're part of the problem in Washington. How do you respond?
Well, I respond that there's a certain degree of unfairness in that. I'm well aware of the president's deficits. I'm also well aware of the fact of what I said. And what I said was in a Commonwealth speech, and if parts of it were excised from the speech, but what I said, I hope in these months he can learn and be end up being a good president. I don't think, and that was catastrophic for some people in my state. Everybody sees what the flaws in this president are. There's no question about it. And that's why this trip right now going on, I think, is worthy so much attention. Can he actually stay on script? I watched his remarks in Japan with respect to the military that were receiving him, and I thought he did a good job. He stayed on script. It's when he goes off script. It's when he tweets. It's where he has to attack everybody if he feels even slightly aggrieved. And his comment that the only one that matters is me. He isn't the only one that matters. He's the one that's there to solve problems on behalf of the United States. And that's what this trip is about. And I hope and trust he sticks to that mission.
Senator Dianne Feinstein, always good to have you here. Thank you
Thank
so
you
much.
Very
Appreciate
much.
It.
I had to watch that like 3 times over and over and over because I thought there's no way she's making it this easy for us. That's your argument? Well, you know, Trump, sure. I mean, there's problems with him. But the problem is when he goes off script. When he stays on script, not bad. But when he goes off script, that's... Dianne, thank you for making our case for us. I don't care about any script when it comes to Trump. I care about his policies. Dianne, he signed a bill that had literally a 6% favorability rating among the American people that guts internet privacy rights. Now when you put your information into a website, they're legally allowed to sell that information to whoever they want. They used to have to get your approval. Trump signed that bill. Donald Trump has been signing executive orders that gut regulations across the country. I mean, coal companies are now legally allowed to pollute the waterways. He pushed a health care bill that had a 12% approval rating. He's signing executive orders that are kicking a million more people off of their health insurance, raising premiums by minimum 20%. The guy is a wrecking ball. He's increasing wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. He's threatening war with North Korea. The problem with Donald Trump is his policies. It's everything he's doing to destroy the middle class. On his first day as president, did you know he raised taxes on the middle class? He got rid of a popular tax break that applies to first-time home buyers. What happened? I thought you were going to look out for the middle class and fight for the forgotten man, Donald. He didn't do that. He's stabbing them in the back. He packed his administration full of Goldman Sachs officials. He spoke about draining the swamp. He is the swamp. He's making White House swamp thing. It is more swampy than it's ever been at its swampiest. Rigging the system more in favor of the rich, taking us to more wars. He's appointing people like Scott Pruitt to lead the EPA. This is a guy who doesn't believe in climate science, who's gutting regulations, who's putting ExxonMobil and big oil people, fossil fuel people, in positions to regulate those companies at the EPA. The EPA basically doesn't even exist anymore. And you think our problem with Donald Trump is that he goes off script? You think that's the problem with Trump, is he's off script and not on script? I don't care if he was on the best script ever. He's still destroying the country. And by the way, you're going right along with him. Why? Dianne Feinstein has voted with Donald Trump a third of the time. A Democratic senator from one of the most liberal states in the United States of America voting with Donald Trump a third of the time. I have a question for you guys. Who's more conservative, Dianne Feinstein or Joe Manchin? I'm having a hard time figuring out. Because guess what? Dianne Feinstein voted for the Iraq War, which of course killed minimum 200,000 civilians, will cost $7 trillion when all is said and done. And that's money that could be used for Medicare for All or free college here. Oh, except there's only one problem. She doesn't support Medicare for All, and she doesn't support free college. So she'd rather do offensive wars, kill minimum 200,000 civilians, break the Middle East, lead to the rise of ISIS, then make sure your kid gets educated and you don't have to go bankrupt in the process. She voted for the Bush tax cuts. She voted for the Bush tax cuts. She's for the death penalty, which, by the way, a recent study showed that 4% of people on death row in the U.S. are innocent, but she's for the death penalty. She's in favor of CIA drone strikes. In fact, she went after Obama when Obama said, hey, maybe the CIA shouldn't do them because there's zero accountability. Maybe it should be the Department of Defense, if anybody, that does them, because there's a really high civilian death rate when the CIA does them. She went to bat for the CIA and said, no, I think they should be able to do it. I didn't even know this until recently. She voted for CAFTA and permanent normal trade relations with China. So she's in favor of outsourcing everybody's decent job. She has been a disaster. She's not progressive. She's nowhere near progressive. She voted in the year 2000, she voted yes, phasing out the estate tax. And by the way, she's taken a tremendous amount of money from corporate PACs. So, Dianne, this is our problem with you. And our problem with Trump is not that he's off script. Our problem with Trump, it's his policies. And that's our problem with you too, which is why Allison Hartson is going to defeat you. Dianne Feinstein has been in the Senate forever. She's been a politician forever. She is the swamp. Allison Hartson has been busy teaching people. She was a teacher, and then after that she worked on Wolfpack and successfully got the resolution passed in many states. So she's been fighting to get money out of politics for 5 years. Allison Hartson takes no corporate PAC money. She's for Medicare for All. She's for free college. She's for a living wage. She's for ending the wars. So we are going to destroy you, because guess what? The voters agree with us. They don't agree with you, Dianne. The voters agree with us that Trump is a disaster because of his policies, not just because he goes off script from time to time. What a sad, sad answer. And I can tell, Dianne, you're going to make this pretty easy for us. And by the way, if you want to donate to all the Justice Democrats, go to justicedemocrats.com/fight to do that. So when you make a donation there, it gets split up between all of the Justice Democrats. We have 30 Justice Democrats running, many of them running against corporate Democrats, many of them running against Republicans, and they're unopposed. But we're going after everybody. And if you want to donate to directly to Allison, if you want to go directly to her, go to AllisonHartson.com. That's AllisonHartson. And you can scroll to the bottom of the page, and you can donate there. Remember, we need you, because we're not taking any big money. We're raising a lot of money from a large number of people in small donations, Bernie Sanders style, and this is one of the many reasons why we're going to defeat Dianne Feinstein. Okay. All right, let's go to Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi, one of the top Democrats in the country, was asked about the fact that it was recently proven that the DNC rigged the primary. Let's watch her response.
You know what? You haven't heard me relitigate last year's election. I wasn't involved in the presidential. I'm only looking forward. This is about the future. I haven't had time to be reading any of that anyway, but nonetheless, what I've seen on the little tape going across the screen. Let's focus on what's really important to our country.
And even though you were directly involved.
No, I wasn't.
But that said, you are a big fundraiser for the party.
I am. The biggest. Not counting the presidential. I'm not getting... Look, I have responsibility for what I have responsibility for. I don't have any interest in what I don't have responsibility for when it comes to other campaigns. I'm heartbroken that we didn't win the White House. There'll be all kinds of books written about what happened. I'm focusing. 1 year ago, that election took place. Can you believe it's a year? It's just a couple of days. It'll be a year. And 1 year until the next election. My focus is on the next election. I don't have a spare second to be thinking about comments that went on within the DNC. Any other questions?
The nerve. The nerve of these people. You're focused on the next election. So, yes, in order to focus on the next election, let's not address the fact that you cheated half the party. That the primary was rigged. Corporate Democrats rigged the primary. Debbie Wasserman Schultz rigged the primary. Hillary Clinton controlled the DNC, rigged the primary. But yeah, anyway, forget about that. Let's move on to the next election. So you want to move on to the next election while continuing to spit in the eye of your base, continuing to tell them they don't count, they don't matter, they can go sit in the corner and shut the fuck up or go cry somewhere else. And then the time the next election rolls around, we're going to berate them and try to shame them into voting for us again. So in other words, you just want to keep losing. That's what you want to do. That's what you want. Okay, guys, at this point, this isn't an open debate. This isn't an open question. This isn't a difficult discussion. This is the time where people who were 100% in the neoliberal corporatist camp go, you know what, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Hillary Clinton, they were wrong. They took over the DNC. They rigged it. They tried to hide the debates and limit the debates. There was a fundraising agreement. They literally had every press release that came out of the DNC had to be approved by Hillary's campaign first. That's what they had. So now is the time where you go, it's a mea culpa. Damn, our bad. It turns out you were right, Bernie people. The Bernie people were saying all along, hey, we think this thing is rigged. They used to mock the Bernie people and go, yeah, it's not rigged. It's totally fair. And it's giving everybody an equal shot. I don't know what you mean, rigged. It's not rigged. And then when it's proven that it was rigged, what do they do? The very next thing they move on to. Anyway, that's in the past. Let's get over it and just move forward. Wait. What happened? At first you said it didn't happen. And now your argument is, well, of course it happened. Duh. But anyway, we got to move on. So let's not talk about that. And people wonder why the DNC is imploding. People wonder why their fundraising is horrendous and pathetically low. It's because of this. And by the way, Nancy Pelosi bragging about her fundraising, that's telling. Because remember, it's not Nancy Pelosi saying, wow, I'm the best fundraiser. People really like me. No, in fact, she has one of the worst approval ratings in Congress. So how can it be that her fundraising is the highest, but she has the worst one of the lowest approval ratings in Congress? It's because she ain't raising money from the people, bitch. She's raising money from corporations and from the rich. She's one of the biggest corporate donors out there. In fact, one time she literally admitted it. She said, unfortunately, this is the system we have. But, hey, I'm the best fundraiser in this system. So So in other words, she's saying, yeah, okay, it's unfortunate because I know that the corporations are buying our influence and we're doing their bidding and we're helping out rich people and we're snubbing the middle class. But hey, that's the system we have. And in that system, I sure am the best. Tee-hee-hee. Oh, man, is she insufferable. Ugh. Listen, there's a big difference between bragging about your fundraising if you're raising in small dollar donations from regular people or bragging about it when you're the biggest corporate sellout. You're the biggest corporate sellout, Nancy Pelosi. Now, in terms of Justice Democrats, hey, we're doing well in fundraising right now, and we'll brag about that, but it's because we're raising in small-dollar donations from a lot of people, and we plan on representing those people. You, Nancy, plan on representing Big Pharma and Wall Street. By the way, Allison Hartson, since we launched in the primary against Dianne Feinstein, she's raised over $100,000 in one day. Over $100,000 in one day. And guess what? It's only when the fundraising goes up quick that the establishment media goes, oh, whoa, what's going on here? What's going on here? So in other words, we have other tremendously popular Justice Democrats who are fighting for what the people want and who've been out there pounding the pavement and working their hardest. But many of them are in congressional races, and you don't raise as much money in congressional races. So guess what? The media is like, oh, they don't even exist. Remember the article from Politico? Oh, Bernie backers have largely given Hillary Clinton's wing of the party, the centrists, a pass. No, we haven't. You're just not fucking covering us because we're not raising gargantuan amounts of money for the congressional races. All of a sudden, we have a Senate race, and there's a lot of money that goes to Allison in one day, and they go, oh, shit, wow, look at what's going on here. It looks like people actually like these people. By the way, the money was raised from over 3,000 donors in one day. Over 3,000. You're not going to find that with Nancy Pelosi. She'll visit six people and raise a lot of money, but it's because she's a giant sellout. And that's why she's trying to cover up the fact that the primary was rigged. Say, well, just move on. Let's just move on and shut the fuck up and vote for us, even though we rigged it and spit in your eye when you wanted somebody who was really going to fight for Medicare for all and free college and a living wage. No. No more. Forget. I don't know why anybody would donate to the DNC. You're crazy if you donate to the DNC. JusticeDemocrats.com/fight. When you donate there, the money gets split up between all of our candidates, 30 candidates. Or in the case of Allison Hartson, if you want to donate to her running against Feinstein, AllisonHartson.com, and you'll see the fundraising at the bottom of the page. But this is the corporate Democrats, this is all they have left. I don't know what I was talking about. Whatever. It wasn't rigged. Okay, it was rigged. But anyway, that's irrelevant. Let's move on because whatever. I don't want to talk about that. The future. Okay, try to move on in the future with, more than half the party actually going, hey, I think what you did was fucked up. And yeah, anyways, forget about that, but you're going to vote for us still, right? Not if you're a corporate Democrat, only the Justice Democrats. Okay. The International Consortium of Investigative Journalists released a gigantic story over the weekend. It's called the Paradise Papers, and it's very similar to the Panama Papers from last year. And what it does is it exposes tax-dodging schemes and the corruption of the rich. So here's The Guardian reporting on it. They're giving the breakdown here. Millions of pounds from the Queen's private estate has been invested in a Cayman Islands fund, and some of her money went to a retailer accused of exploiting poor families and vulnerable people. Extensive offshore dealings by Donald Trump's cabinet members, advisors, and donors, including substantial payments from a firm co-owned by Vladimir Putin's son-in-law to the shipping group of U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross. This is all the stuff it exposes. How Twitter and Facebook received hundreds of millions of dollars in investments that can be traced back to Russian state financial institutions. The tax-avoiding Cayman Islands Trust managed by the Canadian Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau's chief money man. Wow, turns out neoliberal Justin Trudeau is not the savior everybody wants him to be. A previously unknown $450 million offshore trust that has sheltered the wealth of Lord Ashcroft. Aggressive tax avoidance by multinational corporations, including Nike and Apple. How some of the biggest names in the film and TV industries protect their wealth with an array of offshore schemes. By the way, I think one of the prominent names there was U2's Bono is involved in this. The billions in tax refunds by the Isle of Man in Malta to the owners of private jets and luxury yachts. The secret loan and alliance used by the London-listed multinational Glencore in its efforts to secure lucrative mining rights in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And the complex offshore webs used by two Russian billionaires to buy stakes in Arsenal and Everton football clubs. So the way to sum this up is the famous George Carlin quote that I've probably mentioned far too often, which is, it's a giant club and you ain't in it. I mean, that's what this is. If you're rich, if you're powerful, you're in the club. You're in the elite club. If you're in that elite club, you're connected to the people who can help you in this giant tax dodging, tax evasion, offshoring scheme where you could be a multinational corporation like Apple and just hide shit everywhere and get away on billions of dollars in taxes that you owe. Well, you don't have to pay it. You just hold it overseas and hold the U.S. government ransom and say, hey, I'm only going to pay taxes if you give me like a third of what I'm supposed to pay in terms of the rate, and then maybe I'll bring the money back in. Or if you're a wealthy individual. You know, many people who are politicians, many people who are in Hollywood, if you are a powerful person, you get the connections, and then you get to hide your money and not pay your taxes, and then shift the tax burden, of course, because this is what always happens, onto the middle class and the poor. Hey, I don't want to pay my taxes, so now we're going to pass the tax on to the middle class and have you guys pay it. Well, it's sickening. And we've covered a story. This story will never leave my mind because it's so incredibly damaging and it's such a high number that it's just almost literally unbelievable. But tax dodging is a $20 trillion industry. $20 trillion industry. There are Cayman Islands addresses that have thousands of businesses registered to a single address. And again, why is that? Because it's all about dodging taxes. And it's not Bob and Steve and Jeff and Barbara from down the street who make $32,000 a year, who are a construction worker or teacher or whatever. It's not them dodging their taxes. They're paying their taxes. This is all wealthy elites who've bought the government and buy the favors that they want, and they get them. And they have pay little to no taxes, and they control the system. And then, God forbid, you want some accountability and you want some justice and you want equal protection under the law. Nope. That ain't going to happen. Keep your eye out, man, because whoever released these papers, it was the same thing with the last one, the Panama Papers. I think it was the journalist who worked on the Panama Papers who randomly died in a car bomb. Then there were, you know, Michael Hastings. He also died in a car accident seemingly out of nowhere after he exposed generals and very powerful people. Well, you know, for the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, I hope you have some bomb-ass security because you're exposing a lot of stuff here and you're pissing off a lot of powerful people, so look out. Okay, I got to take a quick final break and then when we come back, we'll squeeze in another story or two. Stay right there. We will be right back. We'll be right back.
you with the left, the left. You will think so, I'm gonna grab you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Please don't make me slap you with the left.
All right, we're back, everybody. All right, here we go. Last story or two. Let's go to the disaster. Coming out of the Middle East. Heartbreaking report in The Guardian from this weekend. U.S. airstrikes kill scores of civilians in Kunduz province, Afghans say. U.S. airstrikes have killed scores of civilians in the northern Afghan province of Kunduz, according to officials and residents in the area. A fierce battleground that has been hit by several errant U.S. airstrikes, they say, in recent years. A U.S. soldier was killed on Saturday after sustaining injuries on an operation in Logar in the eastern part of the country, the U.S. military said. The airstrikes in Kunduz on Friday night targeted three villages in Chardara, a district west of the provincial capital where Taliban fighters have long maintained a strong presence. The growing air campaign is a result of greater autonomy bestowed by Trump on his generals and a possible sign of the direction of U.S. involvement in Afghanistan. The CIA is reportedly seeking authority to conduct its own drone strikes in Afghanistan, a first if approved, according to the New York Times. Kunduz has long been one of the most tormented Afghan provinces, especially since 2015 when the Taliban captured and held the provincial capital. During the fight to retake the city, Afghan special forces called in a U.S. airstrike, which hit a hospital run by Medicines Sans Frontières, that's Doctors Without Borders, killing 42 people in one of the most spectacular mistakes, they say, of the war. The Taliban stormed the city again last year, albeit briefly, but fighting persisted. A month later, another U.S. airstrike killed 33 civilians. We're good at fighting back, huh? The deadliest errant strike in Kunduz occurred in 2009 when an American warplane responded to a call from German forces and struck two fuel tankers captured by the Taliban, killing more than 90 civilians who had gathered to siphon gas from the trucks. In a separate incident on Saturday, a U.S. soldier succumbed to wounds sustained on an operation in the eastern province of Logar, where another U.S. airstrike in August killed 11 civilians. So, you know, maybe you're sensing a trend here. Whoops, we kill civilians, our bad. Whoops, we kill civilians, our bad. Whoops, we killed some more civilians, our bad. Whoops, U.S. soldier died now. So, you know, if in case you were wondering, the war in Afghanistan, it's going pretty well. Things are going pretty well, you know. Massacre civilians one day, and some stuff happens. U.S. soldier dies another day. And, hey, by the way, why are we there? Why are we fighting again? The original reason that was given us, you got to get Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda attacked us on 9/11, so we got to... That's how far back this goes. 2001. It's now 2017. We're still in Afghanistan. I can't figure out why they call it the Graveyard of Empires. So we go in there. We say, we're going to get Al-Qaeda. That's what this is all about. They attacked us. Okay, mission accomplished. I don't know if you know, Osama bin Laden's dead. He's gone. So bin Laden's dead. There is no more Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. So why are we still there? Well, now, I don't know, move the goalposts in the Taliban now. Okay, but the Taliban's horrendous, but they didn't attack us on 9/11. Yeah, but close enough. They housed Al-Qaeda, so close enough. But they control 40% of the fucking country. What you're doing is you have an excuse now to do endless war. That's what's happening. If we've been there all this time, and I think the Taliban controls more territory now than they did before. So obviously something ain't working, and we keep massacring civilians, and now our soldiers are dying. So why would you stay there? Well, maybe it has a little something to do more with minerals. There's tremendous mineral wealth in Afghanistan. Maybe it has something to do with opium, you know? And Iraq, obviously oil had something to do with Iraq. Look at everything that's happening. We're massacring civilians, our soldiers are getting killed, and this is all to continue the U.S. empire. To keep the status quo and business as usual going, to keep us the number one superpower around the world. This is the cost of it, man. In Iraq, we wasted $7 trillion, trillions more in Afghanistan. Our infrastructure gets a grade of D+. We don't even have universal health care here. We can afford to do all this adventurism everywhere around the world, create more U.S. enemies by killing civilians, getting our own young men and women killed. No, bring the troops home and bring them home right now. Or else we're just going to keep seeing stories like this. Because at this point, they can't even give you a theoretical, philosophical answer as to what is victory. By the way, in Iraq, what did they say victory was? Get rid of Saddam. He's been dead for a while. Why are you still there? Well, we got to get Saddam. Okay, you got him. Even though he didn't do 9/11, but you got him. Why are you still there? In Iraq, we got to get bin Laden. In Afghanistan, we got to get bin Laden. We got to get Al-Qaeda. Mission accomplished. Why are you still there? They're going to keep moving the goalposts because it's all about perpetual war. And now, by the way, you have the apparatus set up under George W. Bush. Obama continues it while pretending he's more reasonable. And now Trump gets in and he's controlling the levers of power. Great system we set up, isn't it? To give expansive powers to the commander-in-chief. And now you have somebody who's an absolute buffoon and a thin-skinned lunatic like Donald Trump controlling it. It's almost like all this was a giant mistake. Okay. All right, final story of the day. Here's a disturbing story being reported on by Alternet. Teen busted for pot, then raped by New York City cops. Whoa. A New York City grand jury indicted two Brooklyn narcotics officers late last week on charges they raped an 18-year-old woman after arresting her for smoking marijuana. The victim said she was assaulted while handcuffed in the back of a police van in the parking lot of a Chipotle restaurant in September. The two narcotics officers, Eddie Martins and Richard Hall, faced charges of first-degree rape. The victim, who posted on social media under the name Anna Chambers, alleges that both narcs forced her to perform oral sex on them, and one of them raped her. According to Chambers, she and two young men were pulled over by Martins and Hall for smoking pot, and they targeted her after finding prescription drugs in the car. The narcs told her companions to leave before ordering her to undress so they could search for drugs. They didn't find any drugs on her, but handcuffed the teen anyway before coercing her into sex, her attorney, Michael David, said. You'll spend 3 hours in the precinct, they allegedly told her. They also allegedly said, this is what you're going to do for us, and we'll let you go, David said. There was zero consent, David said. The cops were over 6 feet tall. She's very petite, like 5'2 and maybe 100 pounds. There's nothing she could do. The grand jury issued the indictments October 26 after hearing a week of testimony, including testimony on the stand from Chambers. The narcs were not arrested upon indictment but are expected to turn themselves in this week. They have been placed on modified duty and stripped of their guns and badges and are now suspended without pay. They're looking at between 3 and 25 years in prison if convicted. The detectives from NYPD's Brooklyn South Narcotics Squad have not denied that they engaged in sex acts with Chambers, but claim they were consensual. They spent the past week trying to discredit and impugn their accuser. Okay, so, you know, I think there's somebody who's proposing a bill in the wake of this who's saying, no, it should always, you know how there's like statutory rape where it can be consensual sex, but it's still rape if the guy's like 40 years old and the girl's 13? They go, well, yeah, even if you think there's consent, a 13-year-old really can't consent because they're not exactly sure what they're consenting to. So, no, we're not going to, you're likely manipulated. You know, the 40-year-old likely manipulated the 13-year-old. So, no, we're not, that's against the law. That's statutory rape. Well, what they're saying is, somebody proposed a bill that said anytime a cop engages in a sex act with somebody they're fucking pulling over or some shit, well, that's rape. Because the cop has a badge, has authority, so it is manipulation by definition. Even if you think there's consent or whatever, no, that's because you put somebody in a position where there's pressure, there's authority. You can pull rank on them if you're the officer, and so you can coerce somebody into doing something like a sex act. So there's a bill being proposed now where they say, hey, maybe anytime somebody's an officer and they're having sex with somebody they pull over, somebody they stop, that should be considered rape or a version of rape. But, yeah, the cops are saying, no, it was consensual. She's saying, no, it was not consensual, and this is all going to be adjudicated. But I think the most important point is, listen, we need to take away the ability of the officers to even breach a conversation with people like this in the first place. If we didn't have the drug war, they wouldn't have the excuse to pull them over or to start talking to them in the first place. You know, that seems to be the catalyst which led to all this fallout. But that really is, if you think about it, the drug war. It's just a license for officers to harass people. If you're peacefully doing a substance where you're tweaking your own consciousness, I mean, that law enforcement shouldn't be able to say, I disagree and that's illegal, let me maybe lock you up now. So let's get rid of it, man. So many problems that people have with cops can be eliminated overnight if you just take away the drug war, which initiates, you know, a lot of the circumstances which lead to there being further problems. I mean, the drug war, we've cited this statistic a million times, but black people and white people smoke marijuana at a similar rate. Black people get arrested for 4 times more often. How many lives of poor white people and people of color have been destroyed because of the drug war? I mean, you have a mass incarceration crisis because of the drug war. Some people have gotten life in prison because of a nonviolent drug crime. If you just get rid of that, well, and make it so that the cops are only, hey, your job is to, you know, enforce the law and arrest people if there's assault or rape or murder or all this stuff. Well, you make it so that whenever anybody sees an officer, they go, oh, thank God, the fucking heroes are here. But if the officers are getting in people's private lives when they shouldn't and telling them what substance they can and can't take and trying to arrest them for something like that, they're going to become an enemy to the public, of course, because the public doesn't want to be harassed when they're not really committing a crime. So end the drug war and end it now. We need to do it. That's the only way to stop stuff like this or reduce stuff like this from happening in the future. All right, guys, I'm out of time. I love you. And we will see you tomorrow. Peace.